the next guy joining us, Sam Amick, spelled S-A-Y-U-M, writes for USA Today.
Sam.
Sports Corduroy does not care. And I beg to differ with the allegation that he has a dad bod. Sam and I have the same bod. It's called just an awesome bod. Hmm. Hi, Sam.
Ooh-wee. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad you're getting a lot of sympathy on this panel, aren't you here?
You know what? I don't like either one of these two D-bags, okay? Let's just be clear about that, Sam.
Hey, Sam.
I'll say this much. Make sure you get the bio right eventually, Katie. I did an interview the other day, and the guy who had me on, he like pulled out my bio from the old Sacramento Bee days.
Mm-hmm.
There was some kind of a little bit unflattering stuff on there. So the internet never dies. Make sure you get it right.
Right.
And it won't come back to haunt you.
Well, you know, in case you didn't know, Sam Amick came to USA Today in 2012 after 3 years as an NBA insider at SportsIllustrated.com and AOL Fan House. He once split his forehead open on a failed dunk attempt, but later found more success. Is that true?
Attaboy.
I've never read that before.
Oh, that's awesome. See, this is the second time in the week I'm having this discussion, and now I'm regretting my USA Today bio. Here's the funny part about that, and funny is in quotations probably, is I might have left out the part that it was a lowered rim. Uh-huh. Like that should, and then it also makes it sound like I hit my head on the rim. And the real story is less flattering. You know, it's not a great idea to play pickup ball with the garage door open.
Yeah.
When you jump and your head just goes straight into those metal spikes that are under the garage door. So that's the real story. And then I proceeded to drive myself to the hospital with blood like dripping down my face. It was
You're
great.
A trooper.
Atta, babe. You know what?
That's tough.
It's an attractive picture, though.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, real quick. So
you can't see the dad bod.
No, you cannot. Yeah, it's neck up. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot, Sam, because I know you're versatile. You are in the Sacramento Kings locker room, and James Hamm just asked DeMarcus Cousins about his extension. DeMarcus says, "Well, you know, I want to be here. Do you want me to be here?" Grabs the mic, which, by the way, that was Katie Christensen's mic. He grabbed
it's Kate Christensen,
and yeah. he points the microphone at you, Sam, and says, "I don't know, Sam, do you want me to be here? What do you do?"
I had this conversation last night, leaving the Warriors game very late with Comcast Monty Poole, a colleague of Kate's. And I told Monty, I said, I would have been the nerd in the room who just says, "Well, what's coming back?"
Nice.
I mean, it drives me, and I'm kidding, but I'm kind of not. Like, it does kind of bug me. Whether it's DeMarcus or some other player, in media and fandom, we wind up having these conversations like, should they move that guy? Should they not? And I felt like the way that interaction went the other night, it had like a tinge of, like, it felt personal, right?
Yes.
Like, do you want me here? Do you want me here? And, I mean, the reality is it's like the Kings have got to see what's on the table, and if LeBron James is coming back their way, then they probably do it.
Sam, one of the things that is coming out in what could potentially be this extension or this new deal for DeMarcus is the fact that he is requesting a no-trade clause. Now, that's just something that doesn't really happen much in the NBA, or at least not to my recollection. Is it fairly uncommon, or do we see it in the NBA? Are you aware of it?
I mean, Kobe had one.
Didn't Garnett have one?
Yeah, I think Melo has one.
Yeah, he does. He does have one.
Yeah, so it's an extremely short list that doesn't, I think, go any farther than that. Like you said, Garnett. There are certain players, based on the rules of the CBA, that find themselves in situations where they have to approve a trade, but that's not a case of them being superstars.
Right.
That's like a guy gets traded to one team, and then for the next 12 months, he has the ability to veto any deal. So, no, I mean, that's rarefied air. I'd be shocked if he got that from the Kings. They just simply, given not only their lack of success and their need to remain flexible, but, his history as being a guy who can be certainly frustrated at different times, I don't know why in a million years they would grant that, but we shall see what happens.
Okay, so I mean, let's say for a second that they do grant it, and I want you to make sure I have this all right, because my understanding of it is that a no-trade clause can't be added on as an extension. It has to be part of a new contract. Is that correct?
You're probably correct, okay. Nate, but admittedly, I'm still in the process of doing my crash course on the new CBA. So,
oh, okay. Well, because that's where we are, too, and I'm sorry, Sam, because what I was wondering is how they're going to pull that off, but if... You know, you're in the same boat.
Yeah, we're all. The answer is, let's all call Larry Kuhn.
Right.
Larry will know.
I got his number. We can patch him in. Yeah, I mean, you know, that I haven't dived that deep on it. You know, to me, admittedly, it was one of these stories that, even though it sounds like there's been some serious discussions already, you know, obviously this cannot happen until the off season. So at this point, to an extent, it's not conjecture. That's too strong, but it's, you know, these are informal talks, and you still have a season to play, and who knows how the team plays and who knows what different goings on may take place. So, you know, that's a few months away, but it's, I mean, I'll be honest that even the discussion of a no trade clause, I find that, I mean, it makes an already interesting situation even more fascinating in my opinion, because I do kind of understand the Kings' desire to lock him up on a deal like that. But there's, you know, the other side of me that says that they are going to be pretty seriously compromised because of it. And then the idea of throwing a no trade clause on top of that is just a whole nother level.
Sam Amick joining us on KHTK. Sam, just to pop up on that too. I mean, that we'd heard that, or I'd heard that it was no trade clause in there plus a 4-year opt out. The 4-year opt out, not necessarily that uncommon, especially at that level. But from a national perspective, you've heard Chris Mannix said, I believe it was on his podcast, that Vivek is pushing for this and the front office is still open to trading him. You have the national perspective of, I think, a lot of writers and media folk that are a little surprised that DeMarcus would re-sign with this team after all the speculation throughout the last, you know, years. Do you hear the same thing? Is there surprise nationally?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was, you know, I'm obviously closer to it than most national guys not named Scott Howard Cooper or Mark Spears. But, you know, so when I would hear people say flat out, DeMarcus is not going to resign, you know, I was in that camp of people who would say, no, you should listen to him talk about the city. You know, he actually really seems to like being here. But, like, with a capital B, it's like I'm perplexed by the whole thing. And you know, we haven't seen this kind of money, obviously, unprecedented cash coming the player's way. And far be it from me to even pretend to be able to relate to the idea of having, like, choice A, you know, be $40 million or whatever the difference is, and, you know, bigger than choice B. But I do feel like it's a fair conversation, like, what am I trying to say here? I don't love the idea that it went from him and his people saying, hey, show me that you're going to build a winner, that you guys as an organization have figured things mm-hmm. out, and then maybe I'll resign, to, holy crap, what kind of money are you talking about? Like, yeah, I'm all in. Like, that sounds good. You know, that and the idea of players wanting to win, that's where my surprise comes in. Not that he would sign it, not that he's leaning heavily towards doing that, but that, you know, that it wouldn't be a bigger factor that – the team, you know, sure, they're sniffing the eighth spot, but there's literally nothing factually different about this season than there has been about any other, if that makes sense. So it's a little bit like the fan part of me in general is it's a little disheartening that the money reaches a point for any of these guys where they stop caring about winning, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Well, Sam, to be fair, I think what makes this situation fascinating is that DeMarcus has always said, put people around me, I want to win. And he has always said, I don't want to leave. I don't really know if I believe that the money has a lot to do with it right now. And people are so overwhelmed with what the paycheck is and the payday for these guys. But we keep trying to tell people, quit paying attention to the dollar amount and look more at the percentage of salary cap that it's taking up, because the TV money has changed things so much. So in that sense, is it fair to say that the money is so much that it's not the winning anymore, because the two things have always been the same? I don't want to leave, and I want a good team around me because I want to win.
I know, but that last part, this is the part of me that is, is focusing on the organization and previous management, current management, all the above, that's fine. I want to win. But if I say I want to write sports articles and I don't work for a sports article organization, so to speak, then that's not – I mean, they have not shown an ability to put talent around him. And there's – you know, we've had this debate. That's not the debate I'm trying to have right now. But there are 29 other teams who would have varying levels of interest in him. That's all I'm saying. I'm just expressing surprise. It's not even judgment. It's just surprise because typically – a couple situations that come to mind are both in Minnesota. When Kevin Love couldn't get to the playoffs with the Timberwolves, he started looking for the exits, did not have faith in David Kahn, their GM, or in Glenn Taylor, their owner, and they knew Kevin was going to bounce, so they trade him. Kevin Garnett, another Minnesota situation. Historically, and Carmelo Anthony is like a different level of it, even though they had success and they got to the second round of the playoffs, he didn't trust the Nuggets enough anymore, and he wanted to bounce. Typically, when you have, you know, evidence like the Kings do of failure, sustained failure, the player reaches a point where they just want to try something new. So, I hear you on the fact that he wants to win. I'm just not quite sure what makes him think that it will change.
Sam Amick at USA Today joining us on The Drive. Sam, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. The news come out that the referees union is going after Mark Cuban, saying he's been trying to influence games and gain a competitive advantage by, you know, intimidating them and stuff like that, basically being a jerk on the sidelines, typical Mark Cuban stuff. My question is, why has it gotten to this point to where the union needs to make a complaint to the league? Why can't they just tee him up? Why haven't they been able to deal that on a game-by-game basis?
It was interesting stuff. It's a lot of acrimony between the league and the referees association right now and the referee community. And we're seeing it now front and center publicly, which from a media standpoint, I always love stories like this because, you know, there was a statement from the referees union lawyer and it was almost like, well, since this got out, I may as well speak up. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they had nothing to do with it getting out. You know, they're trying to apply pressure to the NBA because they feel taken advantage of. They feel, that they feel taken for granted. And it's everything from the last two-minute reports to the general culture of the way things are going right now. I think that every official that you talk to behind closed doors expresses like an unprecedented level of frustration with everything from the scrutiny that the thing fans don't quite understand. And I wish we could do a better job of portraying in the media, but access is a major problem. It's like these guys, you know, I've got the screws turned on them every single night, internal grading, internal fines that we never hear about. There's a lot that happens that is not on our radar. And that, yes, they make extremely good livings, but they're not making player money or anything close to it. That's the environment right now, and that's the culture. And I think that when you see it going public like this, that's just indicative of the fact that communication is broken down so much between the Referees Association and the league. They feel like they got to do something a little more jarring, like go through the media.
Sam Amick joining us on KHDK from the USA Today. Your article today.
So good you say it twice, Dave.
I did. Well, I wanted to make a rhyme. You know, I didn't have anything to rhyme with that. You wrote an article on the Cavs and what they're going through right now. And the good point, which is, does it really matter right now? LeBron's coming back to Sacramento today. He put out a video last night talking about how special it is for him. This was his first NBA game, and you remember the Nike commercial, Sam. I know you're old enough like me to remember that. He gets on the floor, does his thing. What is going on with the Cavs? Is it Kyle Korver? Is it just general malaise that we saw back with the Lakers, you know, with Shaq and Kobe and that type of thing, putting the foot on the pedal? What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to gauge. We got to analyze, even though it's mid-January, so it's one of those columns where you wonder how it's going to look when you look back on it 5 months from now. You know, it probably won't matter. But, the Korver thing is just a guy who's played for a long, long time in Atlanta trying to get comfortable. He's got to learn the system. One of their subplots right now is because of weather, because of injuries and different illnesses that have gone on with the team. They have not practiced since December 28th. And no team gets a lot of practice during the regular season, but that's a little bit extreme to go 2 weeks without any practice time. And they're going to practice on Sunday, and that's after getting 2 full days off. So they're going to be rested and, you know, better on the practice front for that game against the Warriors. Beyond that, I don't know what to make of it because their average mediocre defense has been one of the subplots all season long. But in this recent stretch where they lost 3 out of 5, it was the other way around. The offense failed pretty significantly. I think it was around 89 points a game after averaging about 109. I mean, they just fell off a cliff offensively. So, you know, none of that is not only going to matter if they win the title in June, but even as close as, like, if they come out and get the job done Monday, then we'll forget about that. But I'll be honest, I'm, you know, for regular season games, guys, I'm fired up for Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun. I talked to Klay Thompson the other day, and he threw some gasoline on the fire and had a few things to say about the Cavs and some of the different off-court shenanigans that have gone on between these two teams.
Like, and the Halloween party and stuff like that?
Yeah, like if anybody, as a media guy, you got, you know, you enjoy having stuff to write about, and this stuff writes itself. Like, if anybody missed it, Halloween, LeBron James has a party. They literally make cookies that say, rest in peace, Steph Curry, 2015-16. Rest in peace, Klay Thompson. They had a Steph Curry, like, stuffed doll that you had to step over as you walked into the house. And then not only did they do that, but they decided to share it on social media.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Klay called it childish, and he was, you know, he had a pretty strong line where he says, well, you know, the only way you take care of that is to beat them down. So it's like, all right, you know, ding, 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 here we go. So it should be fun.
Well, to me, one of the things with the Cavs right now is it hasn't even been a year since Tyronn Lue has taken over as head coach. January 22nd of 2016 was when he took over officially. Obviously, wins a title in his first season with them. But I still haven't quite figured out how much of this is the Tyronn Lue effect and how much of it is just the fact that any coach with LeBron James on their roster is going, the odds are much more in their favor. How much do you feel that he has impacted this team as a coach?
I like the job he's done. I mean, I feel like the first two things that come to mind are chemistry and the culture. And, I mean, I was around the Cavs last year and the year before. When they would come on their West Coast trip, I would kind of make a point to maybe meet them in Phoenix and go to a couple different spots just because I don't get to see them that often. And I can tell you, the vibe – like, I thought David Blatt was a nice enough guy, or I shouldn't say was, is a nice enough guy, the former Cavs coach, and fine to deal with in the media and whatnot. But my goodness, it was so uncomfortable between Blatt and his team. And you could be around the team for one day and start to sniff the idea that these players were looking at him sideways, and it was not a good environment. And I don't know if that's just a matter of personality, if that's LeBron's influence because, you know, he – wanted somebody like Ty Lue in there or like a Mark Jackson who he was pushing for a long time. But the contrast culture-wise, chemistry-wise, I think is very positive. Ty Lue's got a great way about him. He is not, by all accounts, he's not afraid to go at LeBron, and he does that in practice. And there was a great story that Lee Jenkins of Sports Illustrated wrote a couple months ago talking about how in Game 7 at Oracle Arena in the finals, they go into halftime, and Ty just looks LeBron in the eyes like, man, what are you doing? We need more out of you. And just laid into him at a key, you know, a crucial moment for their team. So that, I think, is important. And then you look at Kevin Love, too, and I don't know how much credit Ty deserves for this, but David Blatt couldn't find a way to get a better version of Kevin Love, and they're getting that right now. Now, I don't know if that's just the pressure being off because they won a title or what the reasons are, but, you know, he's gotten more out of Kevin, so I think Ty's done a good job.
Sam, we always appreciate it. You read Sam at USA Today. Follow him along at Twitter, and we'll see you very, very soon, big boy.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
All right.
Have a good one, Sam.
take care. Sam Amick. That's Sam Amick that joins
big
us.
Big boy.
Big boy. Big boy, Sam Amick. We'll take a break. Before we do, though, as promised, and I don't know if anybody was clamoring, but I promised it, damn it. This contest last night where we had people make songs. We had two winners, and we played the one winner, which was a family of four doing a little skit and a sing-along for the tickets. This is Denzel Joyce. That's his name on Twitter. His name on Twitter actually is at young underscore Zell, Z-E-L. And here was his video that we asked people to make to send to Marcus to the All-Star game. And this was his to win three tickets.